You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's podcast is a Q&A, so I've pulled these questions from my Instagram and my Snapchat again. So Brian Keane Fitness on Instagram, BrianK019 on Snapchat. So I'm kind of alternating Q&As at the minute. So I am recording this a couple of days before I fly out to Morocco for the Marathon de Sable. So because of the way this month fell, we're putting a couple of the episodes back to back. So I will be recording a Marathon de Sable, which is a 6 back-to-back marathons with the ultra marathon in the middle of it in the Sahara Desert. I know some of you have been following me on Instagram while I'm away. So I will be recording a full episode on my experience over there as I'm flying out in the next couple of days. But today's episode, just to make sure that we didn't fall behind, is a Q&A. So first question comes in from Instagram. How can I build a mindset to make healthier food choices? I think I know what foods are good and bad, but I just can't seem to stick to eating healthier. Any tips would be great. So there's a couple of angles I can come at from this. And one of the angles I took from my book, The Fitness Mindset, was very much the reason I called it The Fitness Mindset was the first section of that book's all based on fitness. So training, nutrition, supplements, sleep, alcohol, hydration. The second section's all mindset. So creating the right habits, finding the right why, setting goals, building things into your lifestyle and routine. And the reason that I speak on the book to give context to this is from years and years in working with people as a trainer, either one-to-one or online, I found that probably 80% of people that I worked with knew or had some relatively decent idea of what foods were good for them or what ones would support them. But it still didn't really help them staying on track. And the same in training, even though a lot of people tend to be better with training than they are with nutrition because diet is significantly harder because you got to find out what works best for you and then make sure that it's in alignment with your goals. So the reason that I wrote the book, and I'm using this just to give a little bit of context to flesh it out on this episode and on this question, is what I saw with people was that it was the mindset side of things and the different strategies that were letting people down as opposed to not knowing what foods were right to eat. Now, there is a 20% population of people who are unsure on what foods are healthy or they just don't have the basic knowledge of nutrition. There's a good chance if you're listening to this podcast that you've got some idea of what foods are quote-unquote healthy. You know the difference between McDonald's and broccoli and chicken and that they're massively absorbed differently by the body in terms of health and energy. But the thing that lets people down is not building the right nutrition into their lifestyle. So I'm going to flesh out a couple of different angles and methods and tactics that you can apply to help you make healthier food choices and build a mindset in order to stick to it long term so that you don't fall off or you don't eat well for 2 days and then go off it or eat well for Monday to Thursday or Friday and then fall off at weekends and have this repetitive negative feedback loop or a cycle where you just can't stick to a nutritional plan long term. So the number one thing that I would look at is understanding that the best nutritional plan that you can create or follow or have designed for you is one that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, that includes foods that you enjoy, and that is in alignment with your specific goals. It's what I try and do with people coming through my programs, particularly the BKF online program. And most coaches, particularly the ones that are highly recommended by different people, either online or in gyms or in your gym, will have a very, very similar outlook because it's very easy to give somebody a diet plan or a nutritional plan for 6 weeks and say, follow this and you'll lose weight or you'll build muscle. And you can stick to eating rice and chicken and broccoli and all these different foods for 6 weeks, deprive yourself of everything that you enjoy and your body will change 100%. That's why people do juice diets and bar diets because they're very, very straightforward. Here you drink 2 juices a day, you have a bar a day and you do that for 6 weeks and you lose weight. And that will 100% work. If you're eating 600 or 800 calories a day, and you're particularly if you're training on top of that, you're 100% going to lose weight, and you'll probably lose some body fat as well. but you're not going to be able to stick to it long term, and you're also going to downregulate those hormones that are very important to stay on top of, your ghrelin, your leptin, your hunger satiation hormones that tell you you're full, that tell you you're hungry, can all get downregulated. So one of the reasons that people jump on these fad diets or will go on a broccoli, chicken and rice diet for a few weeks, which is probably a better alternative obviously than a juice diet, but still doesn't fix the problem long term, largely comes down to the fact that it's not fitting in foods you enjoy. And it's not, even though it's in alignment with your goals of what you're trying to achieve, you're in a calorie deficit for the most part, if you can't stick to it long term and you constantly think that you're eating just this diet plan and you don't reframe it in your own mind as a nutritional strategy that works just the way you eat, it can make it very, very difficult to stick to it long term. So that's the first thing, is understanding that there are loads of foods out there to build those into your plan, the ones that you enjoy that you can stick to long term, then get your calories and macros calculated so that it's in alignment with your goals. Either do that yourself, use MyFitnessPal, or get a coach or a trainer to do it, or someone that's qualified in nutrition to do that for you, and then make sure that you're sticking to it long term. After that, and these are the things I spoke about in the book and I'm going to expand on them here, it's things like making the right automatic choices. So one of the most positive feedbacks I got from people in the nutrition section of the fitness mindset, and it kind of come in and correlates with the habit section of the book, was the fact that when you are using food choices and you're making food choices that are automatic in terms of you know what ones are going to work best for you, and you make it a daily habit that you're eating the right foods, it becomes habitual over a certain period of time. And the University of London's most famous study on habits says that it takes about 66 days to create a new habit. So what I advise to people generally is when you start with that alignment strategy of foods that you enjoy in alignment with your goals that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, when you build that in and do it for 2 months or 3 months, so 66 days plus, it starts to become automatic. And it goes from a diet you're following to just the way you eat. And when you can do that one reframe, that sets you up long term for making healthier food choices. For example, one of the tips or one of the examples that I give personally is when I go into a restaurant now, I automatically make certain food choices. I'll automatically order a lean beef or baked salmon or roast chicken. I'll get any sauces on the side. I'll get roast or baked potatoes, and I'll get my salad or my vegetables with it. That's normally my automatic choice, unless I'm strategically going to a restaurant where, right, this is my free meal, I'm gonna have whatever I want. But automatically, that's what I gravitate towards because I know what works best for my body. I know what food choices support my goal or whatever it is I'm trying to achieve at that moment in time. And that choice is automatic. I don't even think about it anymore. And what happens to people when you're following that style of, you know what foods work for you, they're the ones that you enjoy, and they're all in alignment with what it is you're trying to achieve with your body composition, either losing body fat or building muscle or improving performance, those choices become automatic. You walk into Tesco or Dunn's or Costco if you're in the States listening, or wherever it is that you do your food shop, and you automatically pick up the foods that you know are going to work for you because you know the good carbohydrate sources, your brown rice, your quinoa, your sweet potato, your baked potatoes, you know your healthy fats, your olive oil, your avocado, your hemp oil, your coconut oil, you know your complete protein sources, your chicken, turkey, fish, beef, whatever it is that you have a preference for, and then obviously you may be combining them into different recipes, but they become automatic. And after 66 days or so, after 2-3 months, you don't even think about it anymore. So the key to long-term success with making healthier food choices tends to be that combination. So what I would advise for anybody who's struggling to make healthier food choices, or struggling to stick to a diet plan long-term, or struggling to just find what works best for them and can't seem to build in the right automatic choice, or can't seem to get their body composition to change because nutrition keeps letting them down, is Start by building your nutritional plan that's in alignment with your goals. You need to know what it is you're trying to achieve. I regularly say on the podcast, you can't hit a target you can't see. But once you know that you want to drop 3 dress sizes, or you want to get your abs out, or you want to build some size on your arms, or you want to build muscle or improve your performance, when you know what the end goal is, you can reverse engineer and work backwards to that, and you can build your nutritional plan or nutritional strategy around that. So make sure it's in alignment with your goals. Make sure it fits into your lifestyle and schedule. If you're making food choices that take 2 hours or 3 hours of preparation time for meals, and you have a super busy lifestyle, you might have 3 or 4 kids or a job that you work 12-hour days, realistically, you're not going to be able to prep 2 or 3 hours worth of food every single day. So make sure it fits into your lifestyle and schedule. That may be batching your cooking. That may be prepping easy meals or making healthy food choices that are easy on the go. That may be using a food company that preps your meal in advance and delivers it to your office. So find what works best for you that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, and then make sure it includes foods that you enjoy. Because I know myself, and as someone that has been fortunate, I've lived a pretty healthy lifestyle for a large part of my adult life. All the foods I eat are foods that I enjoy. And the reason that I'm able to stick to my nutrition long term is I never feel like I'm following a diet, because I'm eating foods that I like. That's one of the massive keys for success long term. And one of the things that I really put in huge emphasis on people coming through my programs, particularly my BKF online program, which is my fitness program for people wanting to lose body fat or get leaner or build muscle, because you're trying to build a strategy that you can stick to long term. Because I can give anybody a sample, one size fits all, broccoli, rice and chicken, calculate the macros, calculate the calories, and give it to you, and your body will composition will probably change, provided that your training program is in alignment with what you're trying to achieve, but you're not going to stick to it long term. So that's why on the check-ins with my clients, and particularly me and my coach Emma, we're changing up the nutrition depending on the person around preferences. Your trainer, your coach, or yourself, you should be doing the same thing so that you're able to stick to it long term. Because when you have a broader knowledge on what foods are good for you, quote unquote good for you, when I say good for you, I don't mean the traditional sense of, well, this food is bad, this food is good. I mean good for you in terms of they're supportive and in alignment with your goals and you enjoy them. When you find out what foods are good for you, you can build those into your plan and you'll be able to stick to it long term. So hopefully that helps with anybody who's looking to build a mindset to make healthier food choices, creating the habits and then building it in, and trust the process of 66 days or 2-3 months where you're making those automatic choices and then you don't even think about it anymore, and hopefully that will help a lot. Okay, next question. What are your thoughts on twice a day training? So I know there's a couple of you listening who will either... This is normally higher-end trainers or people that have been training for several years, where they will experiment with twice-a-day training, where you're splitting up your workouts into 2-a-days. I'm going to talk on this for people that are either even beginners and whether they're even considering this, or the pros and cons of doing it, or for those of you who will currently do it or have done it in the past and are wondering should you go back and do it again. So I'm going to talk a little bit on personal experience, a little bit on what happens physiologically, and a little bit of the pros and cons of both, of doing twice a day training and the benefits of separating it and making sure that you aren't taxing your central nervous system or your muscular system so that you're actually regressing and going backwards, which can happen with twice a day training. So there's a couple of pros and cons I'm going to talk on, and hopefully you get a lot of value from it. So twice a day training really depends on what you define as twice a day. And for example, certain people will do fasted cardio in the morning and then they'll do weight training in the evening and will classify that as twice a day. Some people will have their normal weight training program and they'll do it twice a day. Some people will do the same body part where they do their chest and arms in the morning or glutes and hamstrings in the morning and they do it again in the evening and they do that consistently. And probably the most common version of twice a day is people following a traditional training program in the gym or at home, and then doing classes in the evening, or splitting that where it's AM versus PM. So depending on how you define twice a day, all of those kind of come under that umbrella. And the main risk of twice a day training from personal experience, and I've done twice a day training, particularly when I used to compete as a bodybuilder, when I was doing a lot more fitness modeling, where I would have shoots, you know, at least once a month. I was doing a lot more twice a day training because of trying to stay super lean nearly year round. And when I say super lean, I mean in the context of relative terms from fitness models, which is like 6-7% body fat for a guy. So I was doing twice a day to keep my metabolism up and try and hold my size, and so that I was constantly ready for photo shoots. What can happen with that, and I suffered from this from personal experience, is your central nervous system fatigue, which is probably the worst side effect of twice a day training. So central nervous system fatigue, there's generally the two main types of overtraining, or is the word most commonly used, is central nervous system fatigue and then muscular fatigue. Muscular fatigue is a lot easier to define. It's when you've overtrained a muscle and you just can't get any blood into it. You can't get a pump into that muscle, and it's just, you just feel a bit leggy and you can't actually get a good workout from a muscular sense. Central nervous system fatigue is a lot heavier version of that. It's all of those things that you get muscularly. You can't get a pump in the gym. Your energy levels are sapped, but it also contribute to very poor sleep quality. So you can't drop into deep REM, restorative, rapid eye movement sleep. Your body just won't drop. It's in a constant state of fight or flight. So if you think of your central nervous system, it's when you stimulate it too much, which is either through caffeinated drinks or different stimulants or through training, where your central nervous system is just overstimulated, you put your body into this consistent state of fight or flight. And your fight or flight response is a great thing. It's something that kept you alive thousands of years ago. Fight or flight is your fight, flight, or flee. It's when there's cortisol or adrenaline released in your body and it sends it into fight or flight mode, which means that your energy levels are high and you are able to have a higher output in terms of the evolutionary reasons, where if there was a tiger, you went into fight or flight and you were able to either fight the tiger or flee, and your body, your cortisol would be coursing through your body, your blood would be pumping to the muscles and you'd be able to run away faster, or alternatively you'd be able to fight, not in most cases of saber-tooth tigers, but in cases of coming up against another, you know, primitive species that you were trying, that you were taking on. That's kind of the evolutionary reason for fight, the flight or flight response. Modern day equivalent of that can come from overtraining, where you're constantly in that state of fight or flight. Now, this can come also from stressors in life. So if you're in a super high stressful job, or in a really stressful relationship, or you have a newborn at home, something that is constantly putting you into a state of fight or flight, you can also get central nervous system fatigue from that. But in the context of twice a day training, it's very common because of normally when you're doing twice a day training, you also tend to layer on top of that a considerable amount of stimulants or caffeine or something that gets you through those workouts. Very few people that I know that do twice a day or have done twice a day do it with zero stimulants. Because you're tired and it's hard to get that energy to train twice a day, you tend to focus more on things that give you energy, and normally in the stimulant base, particularly in the workout community, because of the amount of pre-workouts and fat burners and caffeine pills, cans of Monster, Red Bull that are readily available. It's very, very easy to just constantly take those stimulants that are going to get you through those twice a day workouts. I did it myself when I was competing and I was traveling as a fitness model. That's when I really taxed my central nervous system. And your sleep is one of the first things that gets really negatively affected. So what happens is you're sleeping, and in the case of a lot of people, and I found this myself, that you're sleeping and you aren't waking in the middle of the night, but you woke up in the morning and you never felt recovered. I used to always describe it like I felt like I was hit by a bus. So I would wake up in the morning, and a good sign your central nervous system fatigue is starting to set in, or has been, is you're on track to full-blown central nervous system fatigue, is when you're waking up in the morning and you feel like you've been hit by a bus, and it takes you 15, 20 minutes just to kind of shake it off and get right in the morning. Or you need something stimulated or caffeine just to get you out of bed or to make you feel normal. That's normally the first sign of it. Another one is if you are sleeping and you wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, or you hear a noise and you just cannot fall back to sleep again because your body goes straight into fight mode. And that's something that I found from personal experience when I was taking way too many stimulants, particularly fat burners. I had a very, very bad stimulant problem with fat burners during that time in my life. I've spoken about that in other podcast episodes. And you'd wake up at, you know, 4 a.m. to go to the bathroom and your body, you were wide awake. And that was happening to me because of the central nervous system fatigue. The other one then that doesn't get spoke about as often, but I've spoken about it on some of my social media channels, is a complete shutdown of your sex drive, which is normally one, depending on the person, you'll normally have one of those two things happen first. It's normally a sign you're entering central nervous system fatigue, either through stressors in your life or overtraining, is your sleep gets completely out of whack, or your sex drive just goes to zero. It's not that you can't have sex, particularly as a guy, but this happens in both genders. It's not that you can't, it's just that you don't really want to. And that is normally a sign that there's something off somewhere. So what I would advise with twice a day training is, before you decide that's something you're going to do, be aware that the side effect of it is normally that central nervous system fatigue or muscular system overtraining. And that can be minimized by structurally backing off when you're doing twice a day training. So what I learned from personal experience was I could get away for about 2 or 3 weeks doing twice a days. But if I continued after that point, I started to run into central nervous system fatigue area. So what I would advise for anyone that's doing twice a day, particularly two intense workouts, and again, it's relative, because you may be doing twice a day, but only twice a week. So that's only 4 workouts a week. So you may be okay in that sense. But normally twice a day, people are either 4 or 5 times a week. So that's 8 to 10 sessions in a 7-day week. So I would advise backing off. If you are doing doubles or twice a day training, make sure that you have a structured period where you're backing off, back to singles or a complete rest week. One tips that I spoke about that I've used myself, particularly in my mid-20s, when I'd be going on holidays or going somewhere where I'd be walking around shirtless, particularly was like when I was a single guy, 25, you know, no kids, no mortgage, nothing. I literally lived to party. And what I would do before I went away was I would strategically overtrain, where I would do twice a day sessions for 10 days consistently before a holiday, and then I would completely back off for the week I was away. So what this normally did was it gave me recovery while I was away. It made me mentally feel better because I'd done so much training and I was to the point of exhaustion by the time I went. And thirdly, I used to always look better about 4 days, 5 days into my holiday, because all that fibers you torn, all the flatness that you had from the glycogen depletion started to come back, and you actually ended up looking better. So that's something that I've applied myself and can work quite well over the short term. So my thoughts on twice a day training is it works very, very well, particularly if you've structured it well. For me, I always liked a higher reps in the morning and heavier weight in the evening. I would do the same body part. I would do a push-pull leg split, and I would do all my high volume push in the morning. I would do heavier weights, 6 to 8 reps in the evening, and then I would do that for push pull legs, and I would do that on a cycle repeat. Push pull legs, rest is kind of how I split it, and that works very, very well for me. But again, for you, those of you listening, you may find that it's splitting it with a class. Some of you may be doing a run that's splitting it up, fasted cardio and weights. The only thing I would offer is just track your body and don't push past it if you're consistently feeling those symptoms of overtraining, where your sleep is starting to get disrupted, your sex drive is starting to drop, you're irritable around people that you wouldn't normally be irritable about, your hunger's either massively through the roof or you have none at all. There are other signs. They tend to be not as pronounced as the sleep and sex drive, but are also signs of central nervous system fatigue. So by all means, experiment with it, try it, but just monitor how your body is feeling so that you know when to back off, just so that you don't push it to the point where you crash completely out the other side. Because that's what happened to me when I backed off, when I reduced back the stimulants, when I reduced back the training. I felt just horrible for nearly a month after it because my body had been pushed so far. So I would advise and offer, with my mess being my message, don't push your body to that limit. Learn to back off a little bit before then, and then by all means experiment with it, and hopefully that helps, just from my own personal experience with it. Okay, next question. What are your thoughts on visualization and meditation? So I'm going to break this into two parts. I'll talk first on visualization and on meditation, even though there's a little bit of crossover, I think. In my life, they're very much individual, and I've segmented them. They're not necessarily overlapped, even though I know a lot of people blend them together and that their visualization can help meditation and vice versa. So for me, visualization is something that I practice nearly every day, and I find it super powerful. And it's a topic that I generally don't get into that often, just because it can be sometimes misconstrued as a little bit woo-woo. And one of the things that I've talked about in podcasts in the past, particularly with guests, one of the questions I ask is there something that you believe that other people think is crazy? And the example that I will regularly use is, if I was to answer that question myself, is that of visualization. I believe that if you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. And that visualization has massively supported me in my life over the last 3 or 4 years. And I'm the first one to say that any belief system that supports you, regardless of what other people think or regardless of what outside world thinks, if that belief system is supporting you, then double down on it and keep it. It's one of the reasons that I speak to people about, I'm not religious and I have no massively strong opinion on religion, but people that are super religious and have a belief system that's supporting them and makes them feel happier in their life, I'm like, awesome, you do that. It's 100% working for you. And it's one of the reasons that I don't have a strong opinion on it, even though I don't believe in it myself. That belief system of religion, of Catholicism or Protestant or Jewish or Buddhist or whatever language or label you want to put on it, those belief systems don't support me. So I personally don't have any attachment to them. But the people that they do support, I'm the first one to say, then double down on that 100%. Keep it. If it's making you happier and feeling better about your life, then keep it. Visualization is one of those things that massively supports me. And I'm going to give an example of how I use it, because it tends to be a little bit more practical. My personality type is very much of the practical side of things. I like to be able to see things visually, and I like to be able to act out on them and put action steps in place. It's, again, a personality trait that has supported me a lot of in my life in general, but particularly over the last 3 or 4 years when I've combined it with visualization and setting myself targets that I want to try and achieve and things that I want to try and achieve. So how it looks like for me is a combination of visualization with affirmation. So affirmations are, some of you may have heard it from different self-help books, where you have an affirming idea that you repeat in your head or you write it down. I generally, every time I get a bout of edginess or anxiety that comes on me, and I get it randomly, it's one of those things that I'm very, very aware that those emotions that come on, like anxiety and scarcity and loneliness and regret and all these emotions that come on, for me, putting things into words on focusing on the thing that I'm trying to achieve the most in my life that's going to support me, support my family, support my daughter, support my mother, support the people that are listening to me, listening to this podcast, you listening now, people that read my books. These, when I focus on those things, that anxiety and those feelings tend to dissipate. And one of the reasons that I regularly comment on the Theodore Roosevelt quote, that comparison is the thief of joy. I know myself that anytime that I feel anxious or worried or just on edge, it's normally not when I'm, in my own words, living my best self or becoming my best self or doing my best self. It's normally when I'm comparing myself to other people. It's when I'm looking on someone else's Instagram page and I'm wondering, oh, what are they doing differently? Why do they have this? Or why do they have more followers? Or I'm looking at someone's business and wondering, why are they making, you know, this amount of money? Or I look at somebody else's car or house or girlfriend or whatever it is, whatever stories I told myself, my anxiety tends to feed on my anxiety and makes me worse. And when I focus back on the things that are supportive in my life that I'm trying to achieve, that tends to completely dissipate nearly instantly. So how that looks for me in a physical manifestation in terms of tangible output, I normally write it down. I have an Evernote on my phone. So it's an app on the phone. I think it's free for a certain amount of gigs. And it's just like the notes on your phone. And I've got an affirmations page or goals page, and every time I feel that comparison coming on, I start to jot down all the things that I'm trying to achieve. So I can tell you everything that I'm trying to hit over the next year, over the next 2 years, over the next 5 years, and then over the next 10 years. The next 5 and 10 years are a lot more vague, and I'm not attached to how I get there in any way, shape, or form. But when you start putting these things down, and I either put them onto a whiteboard or either write them on a page or I put them in my phone, and that allows me to work off a little bit of cognitive neuroscience that I know is starting to get backed up on the theory of visualization now. And I've spoken in previous podcast episodes about your reticular activation system. It's the part of your brain that tells you what to focus on. And for the example that I normally give is if you've bought a new car, bought a new Toyota or bought a new Peugeot, all you can see on the roads are cars, Peugeots and Toyotas. If you walk into a shop or you walk into a party and you see someone with the same shoes as you or the same t-shirt as you or the same dress as you, it's the first thing you notice because that's where your reticular activation is focused on. What happens with visualization and when you understand the cognitive neuroscience, or in my case, when I understood the cognitive neuroscience of what was happening in my brain, it made me realize that the things that I focused on, the things that I gave energy to, and the things that I visualized started to manifest themselves in real life, whether that was through manifestation and actual thoughts becoming things, or whether it was a case that just my reticular activation system had chosen to focus on the things that were going to support the end goal, my entire life started to change. Because now what happens is when that RAS system is focused on something, you start to see things that weren't there. And anybody that has been in a relationship, for example, where they found their soulmate or their life partner and they're like, yeah, they were my best friend. It's like that person was in front of you all the time. It's just somebody pointed it out to you and it made you see it in a different light. And visualization works the same way. So what I generally do with my life, and I've spoken about this in the past, is I break it into four quadrants. I've got my health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And I literally write down my affirmations in those four quadrants on what it is that I'm trying to achieve. What it is I'm trying to achieve in my health, my energy levels, my physique, my fitness. What it is I'm trying to achieve in my wealth, how much money I want to make, how much I need to invest in the future so that I'm set for the next 20 years of my life. My love and relationships, my mother, my daughter, the people that are closest to me in my life, how I can structure my day around spending time with those people, and my fulfillment, the things that gives my life purpose, making podcasts, writing blogs, writing books, talking to people and doing Q&As on different social media. I literally build that into my affirmations on what it is that I'm trying to achieve, because when I focus on the things that are helping me and focusing on the things that are making me feel better about my place in the world, that manifestation of it tends to show up in ways that you wouldn't have seen it had you not jotted it down or seen it somewhere. So what I would advise with visualization, and again, this is purely anecdotal as somebody who has lived it and uses it and applies it, is write down the things you're trying to achieve in all the areas of your life. Because if you can't see it, you can't work for it. And if you can't work for it and you can't focus on whatever it is that you want to achieve, you're not going to see it because you're not going to kick in that part of your brain that will choose to see these things. So the next time you walk into a room and you see somebody with the same pair of shoes or the same dress or the same t-shirt and you notice it instantly, and there's so much else in the environment, there's people, there's things everywhere, but that's what you notice, understand that's your brain and your reticular activation system switching on. And you can hack that by setting goals and knowing what it is that you want to achieve and then working to it. So what I would advise is, in any area of your life that's the most important to you right now, whether that's your business, whether that's your fitness, whether that's your relationship, whether that's a combination of all four, I split mine into four, make sure that you write it down somewhere where you can see it. Either put it in your phone, put it on a whiteboard, put it on your desk in front of your drawer or wherever it is that you go to bed, so you see it every morning and you see it every night. And then that visualization will start to manifest itself during the day and you'll start to see things that you didn't see before. So in terms of my thoughts on it, I think in practical case, as practical as that can be for a topic of visualization, that's how I apply it in my own life, and I'm a massive believer in it. And it's something that has supported me probably more so over the last 5 years since I started to work on some of those negative stories that I told myself, the stories that I wasn't good enough, the stories that nobody would care, the stories of just feeling unworthy, those stories that I've spoke about on other podcasts, on other blog posts, and in the mindset section of my book. When I started to unravel those stories and realize that they were just self-created limitations that I told myself, and I started to focus the visualization on the things that made me feel happy and that made me feel fulfilled and made me feel like I had a purpose, everything started to change. Because when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And that's what I think visualization means in terms of how I apply it in my own life. So hopefully that helps. Meditation then is a little bit of a shorter one, because the truth is I am very fortunate in the sense that having the training experience in fitness where I've trained all my life, either playing sport or in a gym or doing something active, that largely serves as my meditation. There's a reason that I don't train with people, and I actually hate training with people, even though there's occasion when I will do a session with somebody. I much prefer training myself because it's my hour of the day that's my meditative state, where I'll plug in a headphone or plug in my headphones, I'll listen to music, and I'll literally train. I work a lot of mind-muscle stuff where I'm connecting my mind to the muscles, so it completely disconnects me from the outside world for that hour or period of time, and that generally serves as my meditation. However, I have experience with other forms, things like the Headspace app, things like your bed of nails, where it's mild acupuncture release, where you're just meditating. I've done a little bit of mindfulness where you're catching negative thoughts. And there's a great book by Tara Brock called Radical Acceptance, which speaks on the Buddhist principles of suffering coming from attachment and just recognizing any negative emotions that are coming for what they are and not attaching to them. And simultaneously, anytime anything good happens or any positive or pleasurable feeling comes, not trying to grasp them and not let them go. And for me, that's a very, very short, practical meditative technique that you can do instantly when a negative emotion comes on you. And I do apply that, but I don't have any structured meditation where I factor out 20 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes in the evening, where I literally plug in the Headspace app or I do some form of guided meditation. I will, I'm sure, at some stage. I've just been very, very fortunate up to this point that the other tactics and strategies that I apply tend to work for me. Other things like experimenting with heat therapy, cold therapy, so saunas and cold showers, they're also things that I find serve me very, very well. And I tend to have that little bit of an ADHD personality that I struggle to sit down and just concentrate. And I'm aware that people that have that personality traits are the ones that probably would benefit from meditation the most. But I do find that putting myself into something physical, going for a walk, into a sauna, into a cold shower or a training session tends to work right now better for me in terms of meditation. I think it's like everything, experiment with it, try different types. The one misconception I had on meditation was that meditation was sitting down cross-legged, eyes closed, focusing on your breath. I thought that was meditation, and the truth is that's not, because there's so many different styles of meditation. And the example that I generally use is, it's like someone from the outside world who doesn't train or isn't into fitness, they see weightlifting as just one thing, even though weightlifting could be CrossFit, it could be bodybuilding, it could be powerlifting, it could be strongman. They all involve weights, but to the outside world that aren't into fitness, to them it's just weight training. And meditation is the same. For years I thought meditation was sitting down cross-legged, focusing on your breath. Now I realize there's loads of different types. There's mindfulness techniques, there's transient, there's different TM meditation, there's Vipassana, I'm sure I'm butchering that pronunciation, but there's different types of meditation. So it's kind of a case of experimenting with different types until you find what fits. And it's probably a case of right now that I haven't found the one that fits me best. And I live by the adage that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I've been fortunate so far that I haven't had to search that far and wide for meditation, because I get it in other areas of my life where I'm able to switch off that prefrontal cortex, that little bit of transient hyperfrontality where you switch off the overthinking part of your brain. I've been able to do that in other avenues, so I haven't had to delve heavy into the meditation side. But they're my thoughts on the combination of visualization and meditation. Okay, next question. Hey, Brian, can you do a podcast about how to cope with a partner who isn't supportive of your fitness journey? When I married my partner, we were both so unfit, drinking and smoking and eating crap, but now I'm on a fitness journey and my other half feels left behind. He's jealous, suspicious, and whether subconscious or conscious, tries to sabotage my attempts at improving my lifestyle and body. How do I cope? So the reason I wanted to answer this question is because it's something that I'm very familiar with in terms of either people I've worked with or people in my personal life that have lived this exact situation. And it's very, very common. The only thing that tends to change are the names. So I'm not going to claim to be an expert in relationships in any way, shape or form, but I do understand human psychology and why people behave the way that they do. And also the fact that I can offer an objective perspective from somebody that's not attached to the situation. Hopefully I can provide value for anybody that's in a situation where they have a partner, or can in some cases be a family member or a friend, who has been in your life and isn't supportive of the new changes you're trying to make. And it's a lot harder in a marriage than, say, in a friendship. In a friendship case, people tend to go through different circles of friends, and you tend to, you know, be the average of the five people you spend the most time with, and you tend to gravitate towards people with similar interests. Married and family are a little bit more difficult because you're in it for the long haul. So I'm going to offer a couple of perspectives on this in the hopes that it provides value for anybody in a similar situation, or anyone that may get into this position in the future, because it's very, very common that when two people enter into a relationship or enter into a marriage, or even in your family, when somebody sees you as a certain version of you, and then you're trying to improve either in fitness or health or whatever it is, journey where you're trying to quote unquote move forward or become a better version of you, a lot of different things can come up in your partner that I'm going to open up and flesh out here, in the hopes that one of them lands. And also safe in the knowledge that this isn't a new problem. I live by the adage that there's no new problems out there. It's been written down somewhere. You just have to find it. And hopefully the advice that I offer here will provide you a value, having seen it firsthand with people in my own life and seen it firsthand with people I've worked with. So hopefully it will help you cope going forward. So the first thing that comes to mind from the question and from the information you've given me is the fact that a lot of people who come from that background of drinking and smoking and eating a lot of crap generally, for the most part, don't have a lot of confidence. And again, there are outliers, and there's people who drink every night and smoke every day and eat a load of crap and maybe traditionally, quote unquote, overweight and have a load of confidence, but they tend to be in the minority. And the fact that you're other half is now projecting jealousy and suspicion and is either consciously or subconsciously trying to sabotage you, tells me that he's probably feeling really, really insecure about himself and probably feeling really insecure about the relationship. So the first thing I would do is I would open up the lines of communication and first explain to him why you're making those changes, because there's a good chance that he's wrapped up in his own story about why it is that you're trying to get fitter or you're trying to lose weight or you're trying to get healthier. Because as guys, from a primitive evolutionary biology standpoint, guys tend to get really, really jealous because we don't want our partners, we don't want our females, we don't want our wives or girlfriends to go off with somebody else. And these tend to be the projections of insecurities that they will try, and guys, again, it's hardwired in our DNA and it's innate in a lot of us, and some of us have to hijack it with higher levels of thinking. But when you're feeling insecure, the easiest thing is to project that jealousy, project that suspicion, or to subconsciously or consciously try and sabotage you so that you don't move forward. It's ironic because the opposite thing happens. When you start behaving that way, you tend to push your partner further and further away. And he's probably doing that now, that every time he is jealous or suspicious or tries to sabotage you, it probably moves you that little bit further away from him. And you can bridge that gap by communicating with them, one, why you're doing it. So whatever your reasons are, whether it's trying to be healthier so you can live a longer life, whether it's trying to improve your energy level so you just feel more confident about yourself, or you just want to look prettier and more confident when you step into a room, communicating those ideas with him tends to dissipate any story he's told himself that she's trying to improve so she can go off with somebody else. So the first thing I would do is I would communicate that idea with him on why you're doing it. After that, depending on how that conversation goes, and I spoke about in the mindset section of my book that the conversations we need to have are generally the ones we don't want to have. And I use the analogy of one of the reasons that I love fitness so much is when you lean into the discomfort of a workout and you push the extra reps that you didn't think you could push, or you run the extra kilometer you didn't think you could run, or you do the extra exercise that you never thought you could, the pull-up or the deadlift or the squat. When you push into discomfort and you lean into those discomfort of a workout, your body changes by building more muscle, by losing more body fat, by changing composition. Your mindset's the exact same. When you lean into the conversations that you don't want to have, it tend to come out the other side with a stronger mindset in terms of diminishing worry or anxiety or fear or whatever it is feeling that you have. That conversation that I would imagine you've probably been avoiding having is the one that you need to have. So if you're having this conversation with your partner where you're telling him all the reasons that you are trying to change your life and why you want to live this fitness journey now, I would also communicate, depending on how he responds, that when he's jealous or suspicious or tries to sabotage you consciously or unconsciously, and you got to be very, very wary with the wording you use. I love the Seneca quote that words are like seeds, that you got to be very careful how you plant them. The words that you use and telling him how you're feeling in terms of how it makes you feel a little bit more disconnected with him when he does that, he may not even be consciously aware that he's doing it. And by you bringing it to his attention, it can allow him to make the changes. I remember in a past relationship I was in, I had this really bad, I don't want to say a habit, it was probably closer to a personality trait that wasn't supportive of making relationships stronger, where I can compartmentalize things and go 3-4 days without speaking to somebody or longer without speaking to somebody, and I feel the exact same as the last time I had a conversation. And I remember in one of my past relationships, I would do this with my girlfriend at the time, and she told me that when I go 2 or 3 days without texting her or messaging her or calling her, it made her feel super insecure and made her feel like she didn't care or that I didn't care. And I never realized that, because for me, I could compartmentalize and I would put that into a box. I would go off and do my workouts, do work. I would do all the other things I was doing in life. And then I would come back 3 days later and I'd get on the phone and we'd talk. And it was the exact same for me as when the last time we had spoke. Where for her, she had 2 or 3 days where she felt horrible that I wasn't messaging. And she communicated that with me. I had no idea. I didn't even realize I did this until she brought it to my conscious attention. So sometimes, because guys, we're not that fucking smart. Sometimes guys just need things constantly brought to our attention that we're actually behaving a certain way that's making you feel terrible about yourself or is making you feel disconnected in a relationship. So best piece of advice I can offer is communicate that with them. Be very wary of the words you use. I probably wouldn't use the words trying to sabotage my attempts at getting better, but I would make sure they're sugar-coated versions of that so that the message is clear, just the words aren't as harsh. Because sometimes it is a case of communication, because when you are not told you're doing something, you don't know you're doing it. And as obvious as that sounds, you need somebody else to bring it to your attention. So I would communicate that, because there is a chance that he may not even know he's doing it. The next thing I would do is a little bit of exposure therapy. So there's a psychological studies done on when you expose somebody to something they're afraid of and you do it consistently over time, their fear of that new thing tends to get diminished. And people talk about it in terms of things like snakes or spiders or, you know, gym phobia or acrophobia, whatever it is, fear of being in the room with other people. The same thing can happen in this situation, where the fear of unknown can make somebody feel super insecure. So for example, if we go back to empathizing and putting yourself into the shoes of your partner here, you're maybe going to the gym now, you may be hanging out with different friends who are healthier, who are into running or into the gym or living a healthier lifestyle. For him, that's all unknown territory. He doesn't know the gym you're in. He doesn't know the other people you're speaking to. He doesn't know the new friends you may have. And there's a complete unknown. We tend to fear the things that we don't know. So what I would advise is either one of two things. Either educating him on exactly what it is you're doing so that there's no fear there, and bringing him with you and introducing him to your gym friends or introducing him to your new health friends or bringing him to the gym or wherever you're training so that he can actually put a bit of context on the entire situation, so it's not this unknown thing that he hates that you're doing. Because that unknown can just become its own self-deprecating fear, and again, more stories build up of who's she talking to at the gym, there's other guys there who are fit and attractive, she's going to go off with one of these. All of these stories can manifest themselves if you put yourself into his situation. So my advice would be, bring him with you. Introduce him to those people and bring down that jealousy aspect and that suspicion aspect. I know myself, and again, I'm very aware of the evolutionary biological drivers of the reason that men tend to be more jealous than women. It's down to do with the gestation period of the fact that females obviously bear children, and guys there's paternity uncertainty regardless of situation. It's an evolutionary driver where if a female has a baby, you know it's yours, where a guy doesn't. There's paternity uncertainty. There's been studies done on this. It's a big thing in evolutionary psychology and evolutionary biology and why it's hardwired in our DNA and then it's innate within us. But guys are more jealous for this reason. And in modern day, it just manifests itself in being jealous about the guys that you hang around with or talk to. So I know myself that it's something that for years had a negative impact on me in relationships, because when girlfriends would talk to other guys, your brain would start to go off and go, well, he's better looking, or he's fitter, or he's more muscular, or whatever it is, or he's funnier, and you start to think that maybe she'd go off with him. And it's funny because in one case, it's an insecurity that's projected on, and you're just projecting it onto your partner, so that could be happening as well. But two, it's just an innate biological driver that guys have, and you can massively minimize that by introducing him to the other guys and making him aware that, look, there's nothing going on here. He's literally just a friend of a guy. You know, this guy is an attractive guy from the gym who's fit. We're friends. Here, introduce him, and it breaks down that barrier. So a little bit of personal experience on that one, that I would introduce him to the other people in your circle, in your fitness circle, guys and girls, bring him to the gym that you're training in, and just educate him and reduce that suspicion and reduce that jealousy by just making him see that you're making this change so you can be a better version of you, and it's not for any other reason. When you communicate that idea with him, when you communicate the way that you're feeling about the entire situation, and then you educate him and put him into the exposed environment and expose him to it so it's not unknown to him, you can massively reduce that anxiety or that insecurity that he's feeling. So I would own the entire situation and realize that it's completely on you to do this. And one of the most difficult things in a relationship, and I've spoke about this in the past, is your 100% is only 50% in a relationship. You can give 100% of everything and it's still only 50% because there's two of you. So my advice would be, own it completely, take 100% responsibility for this. And again, if all of that doesn't work and you're consistently progressing and you're trying to make the situation better and he won't meet you halfway, then by all means, it may be worth looking at alternative routes. But my gut tells me, and from my personal experience of what I've seen, it's very, very fixable. And more than likely, when you apply some of these techniques, tricks or tips or whatever you want to call them, methods, it will massively support your relationship, and it will minimize any of that insecurity he's feeling, and potentially make him see that the changes you're making may be something that he wants to be a part of. And then you have a best case scenario where you're both becoming stronger versions of yourselves and you're helping one another on your journey, which is always an amazing thing. So hopefully that helps and provides you and anybody else that's in a similar position or will in the future be in a similar position with a lot of value. Okay, so four questions today. I've been trying to expand out and flesh out the questions a little bit more just to try and give context from different angles. So be sure to hit me up and let me know, do you prefer the four question format where I flesh it out and expand it, or do you prefer when there's six, seven, eight questions? Be sure to hit me up and let me know. hit me up on briankeenfitness.com on email or Instagram DMs, probably the quickest place to get me, or Snapchat, BrianK019. Let me know, because I base all the feedback on the podcast on what people want to hear, what you like. So be sure to let me know if you're on my Instagram or you're following my Snapchat. Let me know, do you prefer these 4-question episodes where I expand on them, or do you prefer when there's way more questions? So expanding it to 7, 8, even 9 questions, let me know, because as I said, it's all based off feedback on what you want to hear. And the reason I make these podcasts is because you're listening to them. So thank you so much for giving me your ear, giving me your time. And be sure to let me know what it is that you want to hear, what it is that you want me to talk about, and how you want me to structure the podcast and the show. So a massive thank you again for listening. For more on me, you can head over to my website, briankeenfitness.com. All the information for my programs are on there. Snapchat, BrianK019. Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all Brian Keane Fitness. Massive thank you for listening. Catch you all next week.